sing. The angels sing the sweetest song I ever heard. You speak, and the angels sing. Or am I reading music into every word? Suddenly, the setting has changed. I can see water and moonlight beaming silver waves that break on some undiscovered shore. Then suddenly I see it all change. Lovely winter nights with candles.
This is WHFR Dearborn. And now time for our public affairs show, the new WHFR Journal. This is the new WHFR Journal here on WHF Dearborn from Henry Ford Community College. Hi there, my name is Jay Koronik. Today is Friday, March the 20th, 2009. First of all, I want to thank Angel Gomez for hosting the Journal last week while I was out of town at a film conference. Former film professor, just can't stop watching movies. But this is local news and alternative views about Dearborn and the surrounding area. And in a few moments, we'll be receiving a phone call and doing an interview with a local doctor who actually is a community activist, that in his spare time he got together with people, first of all, in Royal Oak, Michigan. And he's written a book about that experience as a community activist and setting up this community team. And we're all into local here. You know, you can do things best and most effectively if you stay on the local level. That's why over the years on the show, I've always said, I'm not so sure I want to pay all those federal taxes or even the state taxes, but local, oh yeah, yeah, we can do better things that way. So here comes a call. Let's see if it's our doctor friend. Hi, this is WHFR. This is Jay speaking. Can I help you? Great. We just started the show and already gave a little introduction, and so we'll put you on the air. Just hang on, and I'll talk to you again in just a second. He's on the line. Let me get it connected here. Hello, Dr. Ehrman. Hello. Can you hear me? Hi there. You are now on the air live here at WHFR.FM in Dearborn, Michigan, and also on the internet from WHFR.FM. I mentioned briefly that you are a doctor in with private practice in Royal Oak, and tell us a little bit about your background. First of all, I mentioned that your book is mostly about your community action committee and its effect on we hope public health and maybe as a model for other areas. We'll talk about that in just a minute. But tell us your background as a doctor, and then we'll get into the issue that your group and your book is about.
Sure. Thank you, Jay. My background, my undergraduate training is down at the Wayne State University College of Pharmacy and Allied Health right here in Detroit, and I went to Michigan State University College of Osteopathic Medicine following that. Graduating in 1980, and been in private practice since my residency in 1983. So I've been in private practice close to 30 years here in Royal Oak, and team doctor for the high school and very happy to be part of the community that I serve. So.
Tim.
Oh, I'm here.
Oh, good. Oh, okay.
I'm sorry.
Very good. You don't have your radio tuned in, do you?
I do not.
Okay, good. It's not
I do
that.
Not.
All right. I was just on vacation, so I'm out of practice at turning the levers here. Well, and in that practice, I know that you are a, I think you mentioned, a family practice doctor.
Correct.
And explain how that's different from, say, most people go and they're looking for a general doctor to an internal medicine doctor. And so how is that different?
Well, we take care of, I like to believe we take care of newborns all the way up to grandmas and grandpas. And the full spectrum differentiates a little from internal medicine in that we take care of, obviously, the children. Most internists start seeing patients usually from 12 and up or 16 and up, and we take care of the babies as well as infants, toddlers, and children. And it's a nice way, I think, when patients, families have illnesses, if there's more than one family member. Sometimes, you know, we certainly can take care of, or often we can take care of patients at the same time and within one family. And we have a broad array of tools to be able to do that based on our training. And the other thing that we do maybe a little bit different from internal medicine is we are have a background in musculoskeletal problems, which some internists do, but most don't have the training. So we can take care of that, and it's not unusual to have a mom in the office with a strain of her shoulder and maybe her daughter having a cough or a cold and her son having a rash. So we can kind of take care of all three things at one time. So it's kind of a one-stop shop, and it's efficient and economical.
And in terms of doing like a family history of any patient, if you talk about one patient, you obviously get that information on the rest of the family that's living together too.
That's correct. There's a lot of continuity, and I think that all that translates into efficient and, again, economical health care.
Well, I'm personally, I've stated this before on the air, that I'm, even though it's not a medical show per se, is that we need more people who are, more doctors who are generalists, but apparently the more, the specializations have attracted doctors in more in the past years, like whether it's doctors fighting cancer or skin diseases or whatever, and I'm not sure why, but we certainly have a great need for more family practice doctors as well as internal medicine doctors out there. So keep up the good work on that front. But you got involved with the issue of childhood obesity, and your new book, Generation XL, as it's called, which I think is clever title, XL for extra large, and also in the 90s there was some reference to, among sociologists, to a Generation X, whatever that meant. But with the documentary that was out there, Supersize Me, a few years ago, right, about the fellow that Morgan Spurlock was his name, a documentary filmmaker, he decided to go on an all McDonald's food diet for 1 month, and in his case anyway, didn't work out really well. His doctor was going crazy about his test results by the end of that month of overeating, too, not just eating McDonald's, but he was eating it all the time. And any time they would ask him to supersize him, part of the guidelines of his experiment was he would say yes. And so he always got much more food than he needed, as well as the unique kind of food that is only available at McDonald's. So,
right.
So you began seeing, in terms of the topic of childhood obesity, you began seeing these problems directly in your own practice, perhaps every day.
That's correct. I became very interested in the topic back in the early, probably about 2001, 2002. I've attended a workshop by Brooks Patterson was putting a workshop on in Oakland County. And I attended. It was put on by him for the health educators in the county. And at the time, he mentioned something that was very striking in that he mentioned that Richard Carmona, Dr. Carmona, who at that time was the U.S. Surgeon General, had stated that this generation, meaning children, has a very good chance of not outliving their parents because of this problem. And that really struck me. It stuck with me, and I reflected on that, and I came to the conclusion that I just can't. I have to try to do something. I wasn't quite sure what we were going to do at that time, but I felt to sit on your hands wasn't the right thing to do. And you know, we have a very busy practice as well, and had to try to find the time to do it, but we did, and we've never looked back since.
And it started in Royal Oak, Michigan, as I mentioned to our listeners. Is that right?
That is correct.
And but the nature of this problem, I mean, it's not just overeating, but eating maybe the wrong things or the wrong combination of food that causes this problem. And what would you say the primary reasons for that are? There's many, many. I would think one is the mass media.
There's so many. It's a very multifactorial problem. But some of the challenges are, as you mentioned, the food and the economics of buying good food. Unfortunately, the kids and families that have the most problems and the highest incidence are the ones that are the most economically challenged, in that there are grocery stores that are around. There might be party stores or facilities that don't carry nutritious, economical kinds of foods,
mm-hmm.
And that becomes very much a social issue. The second piece is the physical inactivity with the advent of computers and lack of exercise, but also on the social front, in economically challenged areas, you have unsafe streets, and if you it's hard to go outside if it's an unsafe environment. So
sure.
The exercise that one might have received 30, 40, 50 years ago, when there wasn't maybe as much of an issue as it is now, that's certainly an issue. And maybe the third piece is the behavioral or lifestyle modification element that we try to encourage families, and that I think is through just trying to engage communities and educate and make them aware of the problems in a very non-judgmental, non-stigmatizing way, because ultimately it's behavior that gets us to where we ultimately end up. So
right.
While people may know that this is a good thing or a bad thing, unless you can convince them that it's important for them to get from A to B or show them a way how to get to A to B, it's never going to happen. So those are the three, the foundation, you know, the nutritious issues, fitness issues that we deal with, and also behavior lifestyle modification issues.
Right. In the mass media that I'm familiar with as a telecom professor for many years, it's interesting that on television and even the internet, the most advertised foods are ones that are perhaps less healthy. I mean, you don't see advertisements for apples per se. You
right.
know, it's always a brand name processed food of some sort, which may have some nutritional value. Some are better than others, but I'm saying is that the most advertised foods are not the basic foods that most people ate. Well, even my parents only served those things, and until I think the middle to late 50s, unfortunately, was the first frozen TV dinner, and it was all downhill from there, I think,
right.
because it was more convenient and less expensive and so on, and although my mother kept making real food. I mean, imagine buying real green beans and real potatoes and chopping and peeling and preparing. And,
right.
And so that, you can't go back, but I'm saying the mass media is part of the culprit just because they've, like, commercialized foods that, for the most part, I'd say, are not the most healthy. And, of course, there's always a question of balance. But young people are very influenced by what's trendy, what's new. And
right, and know, quick, and, you know, things right. that are quick and easy, because we live in such a fast society at this, you know, right now, compared to maybe 30, 40, 50 years ago. But
yeah.
you mentioned the mass media. There's no question that that is a factor. And you mentioned what are some of the factors that certainly is an element or a concern. There was one study, and I don't remember the name of the author, that said that children under the age of 10 see up to 40,000 junk food commercials a year,
mm-hmm.
Which is staggering.
Yeah.
And that definitely influences their decision-making, and this is part of the behavior part of the equation as well. So
yeah.
So it's certainly something to take pause with.
I'm going to talk about your action plan now that your book, Generation X, which just became available, and it is not a plug for it, but we should say that since it is an action manual, it is a citizen, it's really a document of what has already been done and how many different groups and different people in various parts of the community, leaders in the community, had to come together to help change this behavior. I just wanted to say that a lot of people do think, even in college years ago, they're teaching that persuasion, that is trying to get someone to do something differently ultimately, starts with education. And it can, but in fact, you can bypass the education thing to work on appropriate behavior. And in fact, that's why most people buy the products they do. It's placed at the right height in the grocery store. It's in a brightly colored box or whatever. And there's name recognition from all the advertising. And that means that when they buy, it's not necessarily a completely logical decision. Not many people even read, you know, the ingredients on the labels and that. And so most purchases in our society, whether it's food or other things, come from rather emotional reasons and conditioning of past behavior. So getting right to the behavior part and trying to break the chain of inappropriate food choices and eating, I totally agree. I think that's the right track, but it's very hard to do.
We spend a lot of time doing that. We have a psychologist in our program, and we spend time at the beginning, at the outset, and we talk to the parents separately about the action plan that you mentioned, and that's how we start our program off, aside from bringing in a guest speaker. Usually a sports celebrity comes in and gets everybody all charged up,
mm-hmm.
and it's the five-week, 90-minute program for five consecutive weeks, just in terms of getting information out through this CHIP program, Children's Health Initiative Program. And then we definitely address that. We have questions and answers from the parents. We try to help them with their concerns and their problems, and then try to, obviously, the goal is to bring families together. In order to do that, and obviously parents being the key, and caregivers giving being the key to bringing, bringing the end result to fruition. So we very much feel that the behavior part of this is was often overlooked, and we try to spend a lot of time trying to do information and surveys and questionnaires and all kinds of things to give us some good information so we can be effective in getting that that message across.
And in the schools, were you able, let's say in Royal Oak, to set up maybe a separate class on nutrition, or is it all these extra sessions?
Well, what we tried to do is our second session, we talked a little bit about more on the fitness part, but then the third session, we tried to get into the nutrition and just pretty much, for instance, like how to read a food label. Mm-hmm. And we passed around different foods in certain food groups and talked about the food pyramid. There's a relatively new mm-hmm. food pyramid by the USDA. It's under mypyramid.gov. Mypyramid.gov. You mm-hmm. can find it on the internet and just try to, again, more educate the parents and the kids and then leading to application of those through a cooking demonstration and practical cooking for the kids, where the kids got involved, and we had registered dietitians there, and then we had kind of a graduation ceremony at the end. But speaking to the nutritious part of this, more just education initially, and then we have other phases that we're going to be bringing in up and above the school-based program to continue the message. We're working with some nonprofits now. We have some other things that are out there that we're working on and trying to be able to keep the ball rolling, because this is a lifelong experience. So we want to let people know 35 days, 7 days a week for 5 weeks is great, but it's got to be more than that.
And one of the direct changes that might take place is the lunch program in the schools. Can you
right.
that might be modified?
In, yes, and we actually in our planning development, again, we've done three or four programs, one in Royal Oak, one in Southfield, and one down river in Flat Rock. We through a mentoring program, a remote mentoring program. We bring in the planning and development phase of this, we bring the school lunch programs in and get input from them. As to where things are going, and we have seen some very good changes that have gone on.
Sorry about that.
Because of that.
Yeah.
So we're very pleased about that. That wasn't our intent initially to make changes specifically with the school lunch program, because that usually is kind of a district decision. But mm-hmm. because of the engagement of the community, I think it naturally flowed that they started to look a little more critically not only Royal Oak, but other communities as well that's going on all over the country, I think you're seeing schools really responding that way and getting rid of the pop machines and putting in healthy choices and having healthier lunches. So a lot of these things, I think it just kind of flows from just engagement, and that's the whole key, getting schools and parents and PTAs and leadership and the business and health, education, and government areas to try to take an interest in this, and that's, I think, what we've been able to do.
Yeah, it's been an amazing effort, and it's been, what, 5 years?
It's been about five and a half years now,
since the beginning of this, and it takes a lot of planning organization, because even with the school lunch programs, you can have healthy food there, and the students might decide not to eat it.
No question about that.
We have some technical problems with our phone system here. It's not yours, no.
Okay.
We're talking to Dr. Paul Ehrman, who has private practice in Royal Oak, and he's written this book called Generation XL, which documents his work in the Royal Oak area. And you mentioned the Southfield, too. My daughter happens to be a teacher in a middle school in Southfield, and she just says, oh, they just give them pizza all the time. That's all they eat is pizza. And so there's need, but you got to educate the kids to willingly make those choices for better food. You don't want to force anybody, of course. We're all free here in America. We don't want that terrible socialism thing, I guess, but even if it's good for you, I wonder. But, so you've got to get to the parents and the living situation, don't you?
Absolutely. Again, if it was so easy, we'd already have this thing figured out. So there's a lot of interplay on the behavior, the family structure. There are a lot more situations where you have family issues with children, those kinds of things. And again, we ultimately, aside from the pilots that we've put out, which the book reflects on, you know, obviously we want to get into different communities through mentorships and have leaders within their own communities take the ball while we can mentor them. And they're there locally, and they're much able to move things forward than we would be if it's we've received calls from other states, and we try to encourage people within their own community to get involved. We can kind of try to give them the way to, at least that we've had some success in doing this. And raising the money is easy because we talk to local chambers, and we've been able to solicit, it costs about $1,000 to put the fund to put this program together, mm-hmm. and we've been able to solicit funds within 2 to 3 or 4 weeks upon asking them, as opposed to going for grants, which are very complicated, time-consuming, costs a lot of money. And this is all a volunteer grassroots effort. No one gets paid for this that's working on the program. So that's the beauty of it. It's the passion that drives the program. It's not the money.
Right. I see the credits at the beginning of your book, too, of everybody that had been involved, acknowledgments, besides the health community, which is significant, yourself and at least a dozen more doctors and psychologists, instructors, some professors at schools, education community, of course, well represented at several levels in Royal Oak and elsewhere, but also the business community. And congratulations to all those folks, especially looks like Royal Oak Chamber of Commerce jumped on at the top.
Right.
And that is unusual, although we just had a conversation here on this show last week with the Dearborn Chamber of Commerce. That's not something a Chamber of Commerce would normally get involved in, but it's so good for the community. And like I see two holiday market people and also the owner of Hollywood Supermarkets from Royal Oak that are involved.
Right, Hollywood and Holiday Markets.
Lily's Seafood, I don't want to leave anyone out. But
right, Lily's was, and these are, the nice thing about this is that these people were, they're all patients of mine, and they've been so gracious, and that's why it's so helpful if, you know, other doctors in other communities, I'm sure, have patients that own grocery stores and have business relationships, and that's why it's very helpful. But if I could just comment on the workplace issue, as far as the chamber, unhealthy workers are very costly to employers. And, mm-hmm. you know, the kids that are growing up in a city, there is a potential that they may be working in the same city down the road, and we want to have those kids healthy. Employers want those kids healthy as well, and that's part of maybe their motivation. If they have that futuristic thinking, which I think a lot of chambers do. They want a healthy workforce, and we try to talk about prevention and wellness and all these kinds of things, not only for the kids but the families also. So that's part of the people that I've talked to at the chamber, particularly at the Royal Oak Chamber. That's their vision. That's why they got involved.
And I just think local action is the way to make the biggest difference most quickly at the least cost, and even the dollars that were put into it by local businesses and business people and parents and other people in the district probably chipped in some money from the school system too, but all those amounts are so small compared to the cost if we tried to get the federal government, which might be able to do it well, but if they came in, there's all that handling fees, going all the way up right. And coming all the way down, and even if there was a federal plan, it would cost the individuals so much more. And there's always some suspicions, Washington D.C. What do they know about, say, Royal Oak or Southfield or
right.
or whatever?
And I think local solutions, grassroots efforts, build it from the bottom up. We've got enough top down, I think, right now for a while, and I think that if you again have passion driving it. And you have enough people that feel the same way, we'll get the job done.
Let's just recap here two things. One is the nature of the problem, and number two, maybe you could suggest what the next step is. Again, your book is a documentation of how this all came together. It's not an explanation of, where and how and why we came into this childhood obesity pandemic, as you say on the cover of the book here. But it is an action plan, really, for other communities to try to jump in on that. But first of all, the exact nature of the childhood obesity problem, to what extent?
Well, again, the statistics are, again, staggering. In the United States, there are about 12 million children that have either an overweight or an obese problem. Overweight and obese, they're defined a little bit differently, but from the standpoint of future health problems, you can consider them one and the same. Worldwide, it's in the order of about 25 to 30 million. Now, aside from the chronic medical conditions that can occur, that do occur, such as high blood pressure, cholesterol, heart disease, stroke, osteoarthritis, gout, I can go on and on, there is a tremendous psychological effect on children. Growing up overweight or obese has a tremendous effect on self-esteem. We found this out through our research.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other piece that obviously you alluded to was the economic cost of what's going on. If you have, as an example, every child born after the year 2000, every Caucasian child born after the year 2000, one out of three of those children at the present rate that we're looking at as far as obesity, will develop diabetes. So that's just one chronic disease, which I didn't mention, but that is probably one of the more important ones. And one out of two African-American and or Hispanic children will develop the problem. And that is a staggering statistic when you think about these children developing the problems earlier. And not only the medical cause, the medical and the psychological trauma, but also the economic implications to take care of those children and developing all those chronic problems. So it's basically what I've said in the book, a tsunami that really is kind of on its way. We have a lot of things that keep us occupied in the last year in our country, but it is something that I think people are beginning to understand. Unless we respond, our children and their children are going to have problems for year in our society. We'll have problems for years to come.
And it's a separate problem, but without medical insurance for so many people in this country, they're not going to go to see doctors who might suggest, let's say, a better diet or healthier foods directly to them if they, do what they're told from the doctor that may help. But in fact, you're not even all the local doctors are not seeing most of the people that don't have health insurance until they get sick.
Right, and again, those are the people that need it the most are the ones that we're really trying to get to, and we're hoping that by recruiting community leadership in a mentored way, this is going to help get the word out to get people involved, because those are the folks that we worry about more than ever. So,
what's the next step in your program? I know you'd like to you need to continue it, of course, in these various communities, because students and their parents keep, you know, going through the schools, and there's new students and new parents, so it has to be it's not just a one-time program in any of these communities.
Right, right. What we hope to do is we want to cast the net as wide as we can. So now, as we've tried to create this blueprint or template for our school-based CHIP program, which is basically a five-week, 90-minute program, we want to raise the bar, if you will, and bring in other community groups. As an example, on the nonprofit side, we're in discussions with a couple of nonprofits that have regional facilities. This would be more of the after program, if you will, that follows the school-based program, and somehow be able to integrate both pieces together, if you will, to kind of perpetuate the message, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
The other part of this on the community-based side would be talking, and we've been had some preliminary discussions with for-profit entities, fitness clubs and so forth, that are interested in embedding the CHIP concept perhaps into their programs. So the idea being at the front end with the school-based program, give parents and their kids some opportunities to be able to participate in some of these after programs, and we're trying to make it as economical and as time efficient as possible. So we're kind of in that phase right now. So, and all the while trying to build more school programs as well. So, you know, mm-hmm. we want to, because school programs take a while to build, so we're trying to do these kind of concurrently at the same time.
There's many local communities, of course, in besides Detroit, I mean, in the suburbs, I don't know what, 60, 100 small separate school districts,
right,
or more. Have you made any contact, or has anyone made contact with, say, Dearborn?
There's about 432 school districts in the state, and we want to, you know, certainly start at local, regionalize, and then go out state, and we have been making contacts through workshops, going to a workshop in another couple of months up mm-hmm. in Okemos to all the state health educators to speak and give them an idea of what we're involved with. So we're trying to get the word out that just a phone call away can get the ball rolling, and we can help people with this kind of issue and help integrate into their existing programs, at least at the school level anyway at this point.
I'll forward my copy of Generation XL to the superintendent here in Dearborn. So
great.
See if that gives him an idea.
Appreciate
I'm sure they're trying to do things at every level in terms of appropriate nutrition in the schools, and even maybe nutrition education, trying to give them the benefit of the doubt. I don't know for sure. But this program has to fight a lot of external factors that need to be dealt with in order to get this country healthier. So thank you for all of your efforts and your community service, as well as your own practice. You really are doing this, as they say in the medical profession, pro bono. That's how it got started.
Right.
Is it just your payback to your community?
I enjoy it. I love it. I wouldn't do it if I didn't. It's been a joy from the day that I started doing this, and I would do it again 100 times over. So if anybody has any further questions about it, they can get more information. Can I mention my website?
Yes, I was just going to. I have the list here, but go ahead.
Okay, it's www.chipkids.com, mm-hmm. and the CHIP stands for Children's Health Initiative Program.
Right, not the California Highway Patrol.
Okay. It might, but for us, that works for us.
And there's also some children's health insurance program now.
That's called S-CHIP. So,
S-CHIP,
but,
yeah.
Actually, I think we were first, so
all right,
I'm
keep
not going to get involved with that.
Okay. Plus, folks, if you want more information about Dr. Paul Ehrman, we've been talking to, his own website is Doc Paul, that's docpaul.com. So thank you for being with us today, and good luck with continuing the Community Action Program on trying to battle childhood obesity.
My pleasure, and thank you for having me, Jay.
Thanks for calling in. Thanks.
My
Bye-bye.
Pleasure. Bye-bye now.
We're going to continue with more of the new WHFR Journal in just a moment.
Join us as WHFR DJs focus on particular bands or artists during Artist Spotlight Week, the third week in March, Sunday, March 22nd through Saturday, March 28th. Every scheduled music program will spotlight an individual artist or band for either 1 hour or their entire show. This yearly program event gives us a chance to spotlight respected artists from the past and present without interruption. Join us throughout this special week of music programming, Sunday, March 22nd through Saturday, March 28th, right here on WHFR Radio 89.3, the only station making waves.
Join WHFR for the 10th annual charity bowling event. This year, all money raised will be donated to the Autism Society of Michigan. All bowlers must collect a minimum of $20 to participate, but the event is free to watch and open to the public.
The event is Saturday, March 28th, from noon until 3 p.m. at Clover Lanes Bowling Center. So come on down to Clover Lanes and cheer on your favorite WHFR DJ as we raise money for charity. For more information or to make a donation to this event, please call Susan McGraw, the WHFR General Manager, at 313-845-9842 or log on to whfr.fm.
Hi, my name is Mike Holloway, host of Metaphysically Speaking. I am very happy and pleased to announce that WHFR and Metaphysically Speaking are presenting a holistic fair called the Festival of Enlightenment on Saturday, May 30th, 2009, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. right here on the campus of Henry Ford Community College. Currently, we are seeking holistic vendors, readers, and body workers for this festival. If you are interested in joining us for this exciting event, please call 313-317-6540 or email whfr-gm@hfcc.edu. We hope to hear from you soon, and thank you.
So those are all different things that are happening here at WHFR. Things are getting very, very busy, and our Artist Spotlight Week is going to begin this Sunday and is going to continue on through the 28th. And on the 28th, we do our bowling for charity, and we've picked the local charity of the Autism Society of Michigan this time. And so even yours truly, Jay Koronek, will be out there trying to raise money, trying to survive three games of bowling, along with, we usually have almost all of our staff that shows up and family and friends, and we understand some of the folks from the Autism Society of Michigan are going to be out there too, helping us at the event. Clover Lanes in Livonia, 12 noon, a week from tomorrow, the 28th of March, and go to 3 o'clock. And it is $20 a person, and you do need to call and reserve in advance. Just leave your name and phone number and the number of people that that are going to be paying to bowl with Susan McGraw on Susan McGraw's voicemail. That's 313-845-9842, 845-9842. But we're going to be there, and we usually are quite successful. This is our 10th year of giving back, of actually off the air raising money. We can't do it on the air, by the way. Yeah, I know commercial stations can do that. Dick Purton and others, wonderful job of giving back a little bit, a lot, in fact, to the community once or so every year. But a non-commercial station can't do that without very, very special FCC permission. We can only raise money for ourselves. Kind of weird, isn't that? But off the air, we can promote, can mention it on the air, and off the air, we can do the fundraising for other charities. And we've helped, 9 others. We change each year to a different local charity that needs support. So just to let you know, that's what's happening here at WHFR. And way into May, May 30th, we're letting some vendors know we're going to have a very, I think, I like to say, high quality exploration in our Festival of Enlightenment of a number of healing arts, which are non-traditional, as well as prophetic arts, ways to look at the future and deeper into human psychology and so on. And it's true, they're not all taught in college, but we are going to have a number of lecturers and presenters, and so an educational, informative day we think will be had by all. And that's sponsored by WHFR directly. It's going to be on campus here on Saturday, May the 30th, which is not Memorial Day weekend. That happens the weekend before, just how the calendar works out and how these things are celebrated as three-day weekends. So, in any event, we return back to local news and views. And I was out of town last week, but boy, I read the papers. Yep, I did. Apparently had some rain here. That there is a local plan among local lawmakers. They voted to give homeowners a 90-day lifeline if you're in need of help to avoid foreclosure on your property. And that's a serious, serious problem. In January, 11,418 foreclosures were reported in Michigan. Wow. And in Wayne, there was 3,361 in January. One out of every 249 housing units. So one out of 250 to round up. And so Polidori and Costin in the state house have voted a week ago Thursday to pass a plan to aid struggling homeowners and keep more Michigan families. So if you want more information locally, just call Gino Polidori's office somehow and find out how that's going to work out. It's a 90-day reprieve from foreclosure for homeowners who are committed to working with their lender and a housing counselor. And counselors are available through the Michigan State Housing Development Authority. There's an acronym, MSHDA, and the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. We've heard of HUD before, not in a positive way, but let's hope that HUD and MSHDA are doing it. But you can get phone numbers, I'm sure, from Gina Polidori. He has a local office in Dearborn, as well as in Lansing, of course. And the other person, if you want to call, State Rep Deb Kennedy, Democrat Brownstone, Doug Geist, Democrat Taylor, and Bob Costin, Democrat Dearborn Heights. They all were voting to pass this plan, as well as others, of course. So that should go into effect soon, I hope. And so contact his office more about that if needed. Guest editorial in the Dearborn Press and Guide from last Sunday's edition, Michael Albano. And he talks about what I think is more important. I've disputed editorials that talk about Buy American. Certainly you should consider all products that are made, and I think make the best judgment in terms of cost and where they were made and so on. It's a complex thing, but it's good to know what you're buying and whether or not you are. Because every time you buy something, folks, in this land of the free, you are exercising your freedom of choice. And that freedom of choice, it's like voting at a ballot box. You're saying that what you buy is also worthy of other people to consider to buy. And indirectly, they're finding out because this company, this business, this product is being sold more, it's being advertised more because it's more successful. So when you buy something, you are saying, this is good, not just for me, but for others like me. And so I think you have to be aware that in a way it's like you're voting every day with the things that you buy, saying these are the best choices to make in your situation anyway, but also you're recommending it to others because the product is going to be more successful, more long-lived, the company's not going out of business, and whatever. But one step beyond the overall idea that it's important what you buy because you're telling others to buy the same stuff indirectly, is Buying American is just by itself on the surface a nice concept. But by the way, Canadians think they're Americans too. And they are in North America, as are the Mexican, you know, Mexico is in North America also. Yes, they are. And yeah, I know down south, but it's still North America, folks. I think all the way to like Panama or somewhere where it becomes South America. Okay. In any event, United States made products, that's a worthy thing to support along with many other factors if you choose to do so. More important than that is the specifics that Michael Albano talks about in the Press and Guide here. And he's been, as described by the Press and Guide, an unabashed supporter of Dearborn because he's grateful for all the blessings for our city has bestowed upon his life. Sure. Okay. Every place anybody lives, hopefully there's good things that they can say about where they live and be grateful and to give back in some ways. But especially he talks in this editorial comment, again, it's not the paper editorial, it's his opinion, on March 15th, to support local Dearborn businesses. And, of course, we've lost, as we talked about this show 2 weeks ago when I was here, we lost a number of local businesses recently in the last couple of years. The one that hit me hardest was Little Professor closing, a great bookstore that I frequented a lot of times because so many magazines, so many newspapers, and so many, and a good number of books, too, that even weren't at Barnes & Noble or Borders or other large mega stores. And that's information flow. Just like a good library, a good bookstore is very important to a community. And at this point, Borders is not as good as it used to be, and I think there may still be a small local bookstore in East Dearborn. Was it called Kudas? I don't know if Kudas is still there, and I live in East Dearborn, but I've never gone in that particular bookstore, so hopefully they're still there. But he mentions a lot of places, and you got to search for them, folks, to know that they're here. And I know a lot of people don't look in Yellow Pages anymore, and they don't drive up and down the streets enough and look at the new shops or the old shops, and some of them are a little, you know, not immediately apparent. Even Adria Appliance was not on any main road. It was on Carlisle, which was off from Outer Drive in Pelham, okay? And, of course, they're perhaps still open, selling off the last of their inventory, but they're gone. As good as gone anyway. They're not going to be continuing in that location. But you had to even search for Adray a little bit down there. And they mention a number of small businesses here that are worthy of support. There's a paint store on Mason Street, just north of Michigan Avenue in West Dearborn. A picture framing and art gallery on Monroe Street. I remember a drapery and blind place in West Dearborn that I use, and just great friendly service, individualized attention, and maybe you can get that from a large big box store, Home Depot, Lowe's, or whatever, in terms of, you know, curtains or blinds for your house or whatever. But it's good. The local people and the small operations actually have a lot more to offer. Yeah, maybe not in product variety, but in sincerity and after the product support and knowledge too. That's their whole life is like paint or picture frames or draperies or whatever. And many, many times I've gone into these big box stores, and I know generalization is often untrue, but the salespeople are not well educated. I could always say that about Adria Appliance, recommended to my friends. They knew their stuff, and they weren't dependent on sales. That in the olden days, at least, they didn't get commissions. They got a salary. And so whether you bought or not didn't matter to them. They wanted you to buy because they were telling you the truth as best they knew it about the best products that they had available. And they weren't lying to you. They'd listen to what you need, and they would recommend what you needed. Now, I don't know about commissions or whatever on these other stores, but Michael makes a great case, and I've already said the first choice for any product, you need to check out the local businesses. He mentioned, let's see, Dearborn Music. And we're not trying to slight anyone. Ford Motor Company, even though I mentioned 2 weeks ago, they're really an international car company that temporarily has their world headquarters in Michigan and in the United States. And would they ever move? Well, yeah. I think in a flash. If they could get lower costs somewhere else, they would move out of this country with their world headquarters. Still sell cars here, but, you know, they threatened the city of Dearborn 15, 20 years ago, I remember, that if we didn't give them, bigger tax rebates or complete freedom of paying taxes on some Dearborn properties. And they even fought us in Michigan court to reduce their cost. They would say, just fine, we want to pay the fair cost based on the value of our property, and that's their side of it. And our side is, they got all the lawyers to do that, full time. And the average person doesn't. And so they get pretty much, tremendous tax reductions in order to stay here. But they were threatening, well, we can go elsewhere. Just because we have, Henry Ford lived in Dearborn doesn't mean we have to keep the company world headquarters here. And I think every business would say that. They're looking for reduced cost. And they gave $10 million to our Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. So they get the name on the building in perpetuity, whether they're still in Dearborn or not. So they got something in return. It's not like they gave the money anonymously, as a good citizen might. I'm sorry, but, there's benefit to them, and that's why they gave the money, like they did all around the country, to performing arts centers for a while when they had money. Let's see, Bike Sport on Michigan Avenue, he mentions in Albano's article. He can't go over all of them. But I would say it is important to shop locally first. That's the first major criteria for all kinds of good reasons, even though the products may be somewhat more expensive to purchase. You're getting, I think, better advice because most, this is my opinion, opinions expressed in this show are not necessarily those of Henry Ford Community College, although I hope so, or some people here at the college anyway. There is probably less training and less connection to a wise sale. A wise sale is where you get a customer that's going to keep coming back, a satisfied customer. And there's less after-the-fact support in most big-box, large corporate stores and franchises. They are worthy of consideration. Sometimes they have unique products that you can't get locally, but start there locally and then go to the U.S. And that's not always your first choice, I know, but consider that and, research it. Every purchase these days, you got to do your research, but you are voting for the things that you buy. By buying the things you do, you're making a vote, casting a vote that other people will be aware of and find out about in the long run. And so check out local businesses first. I totally agree there. By the way, where is this now? Yes, it's one of the special announcements that I ran off with only 8 minutes to go before Highway 61 and Big Bend. Oh, my goodness. You know that President Obama signed the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009 into law on February 17th. The law includes a new consumer tax deduction for state and local taxes and excise taxes paid to purchase a motor vehicle in 2009. All the way up to January 1st, 2010. So if you're thinking of buying a car, and I see Morris Goodman, is it, the person who speaks for the Democratic Party frequently in the paper, that he's got an editorial saying, buy a car now. And, of course, buy a U.S.-made car, if at all possible. But there's a tax incentive that forgives the 6% Michigan sales tax. Okay. And the deduction is allowed for even non-itemizers. So even if you use the short form, the EZ form, 1040 EZ, to file your federal income taxes, you can still get the deduction. So that little short form is getting a little bit longer there. And there are some qualifications, okay? Passenger automobiles or light trucks with a weight rating of not more than 8,500 pounds, and not on this press release here, which came from my local Ford dealer's website, by the way. And of course, there's income limitation. If you make more than $125,000 to $135,000 gross income, it's sort of phased out. So it's for people that make less than that, basically. But two-wheel vehicles count, too, and three-wheel vehicles. Yes, there are three-wheel vehicles. And so take a look at that. If you think this is the year you're going to have to buy something, this is an extra incentive to do it. It does not say here that it has to be a vehicle made in America, by the way. So there. Okay. Just want to mention that to get that up front. And let's see what's going on here. There's a couple phone calls coming in. Oh, my gosh, I might have said something I shouldn't have said, but I'll do a correction next week if they're really for me. And it could also be a phone call from, well, someone here at the station. So I just can't take it right now. I'm sorry, because that's the way this show is. I'm all alone here today. Many people at the college, but I'm the only one in the studio right now. Got to cover this just very briefly and read the papers this week, folks. 6 minutes to go before 2 o'clock, and that is that at the city council, it's been brought up now that Bob Abraham, one of the city council members, owes $80,000 in back property taxes. He could be removed from the council. He does have plans to pay the bills, which were a part of properties he owned with other people. Okay, he's part of a company that owns residential properties on Garrison, three condos apparently, and they haven't sold. And so he's $80,000 behind. He has no cash to pay the taxes. And there is a technical issue because our charter here in the city of Dearborn says that council members cannot continue to serve if they owe back taxes. And that was interpreted, could be interpreted narrowly, just or specifically to mean taxes on the property that they own and live in, their primary residence. In this case, his business owns, along with other people, he and other people own these three properties, which are residential properties, but they don't use them themselves. They're not sold yet, and so they have no income to pay all these taxes, which keep piling up because they do own the properties. Well, yours truly, I have to say, and Bob Abraham, I think I talked to you once briefly somewhere, looked like a nice guy, but what do you know from looking, right? Don't know much from looking. Anyway, don't judge a book by its cover. I'd say he's got to go. I'm sorry, Bob. Nice guy or not, you own taxes on property in Dearborn that you own along with other people. You can't stay on the council. Take some time off, whatever it is. Just can't stay there. Doug Thomas has a controversial story, too, if we had time. This show needs to be 2 or 3 hours. What the heck? Let's make it a full-day show. No, I'm just kidding. But Doug Thomas finally has come up with some opinions, and he thinks, like Tafelsky has said, we need a big change. He hasn't said he's going to run against Mayor O'Reilly, by the way, and he has run against two previous mayors in the past. Mayors Overall Hubbard and Michael Guido. He didn't run against O'Reilly's dad, by the way, but he's not saying if he's going to run again for council either. But he thinks we've got to change a number of things. Paid parking needs to be scrapped, he says, even though residents of the city voted for the process and it's been changed after complaints. He said taxes should be lowered and just the number of things. He says that the city has started years ago and we've never looked closely at them and we've never come up with new ideas. And be interesting if he does run. I bet he's got those ideas. The only thing I disagree with him on is that lower taxes. I want to pay more taxes since I do have still a retirement pension, if not a full-time job. If it's towards good things that we need to do in Dearborn, I'm happy to pay my part, luckily, because I still have some income. Not much. But local taxes should not be just given up on just because you don't want to pay any taxes. We need services, and services are best rendered, most efficiently rendered locally. I'm not so sure about those federal taxes, they said. A little more secure in some of the state taxes I pay, but locally, absolutely. If we need to raise taxes, I'm sorry, that's controversial. If we need to, for better services, or a leaner, meaner approach to things, a different idea. I'm all for new ideas, too, Doug Thomas, as you know, and love to cover more about that in the future. That's about all the time we have now on today's new WHFR Journal. We want to thank Dr. Paul Ehrman, that's Ehrmann from Royal Oak, for talking about his community service project. And he does have a book out, but it really, folks, it is an action plan for fighting the battle against childhood obesity and indirectly, of course, making this a healthier neighborhood, country, healthier, stronger, more vital in the long run. And we can do it locally. That's the whole point of this book, which is called Generation X. And there might be there's copies maybe at Barnes & Noble and Borders if you're interested. But it is not background on the pandemic as much as it is the action plan. That's something that needs to be, a copy needs to go to the school officials and doctors in the community. Give a copy to your doctor or whatever and let's say, get going with this, okay? Give something back. Take action. And it's going to help. It's going to be great if we all work locally. And even if we have to pay some higher taxes to get the appropriate things going, be better than the federal government coming in. I can almost guarantee you on that. It was Morris Goodman. What did I say? Some other name, Morris Goodman, his editorial about BioCar Now Saved the American Economy. That's in the Press and Guide on this Wednesday. Well, thank you for listening to the new WHFR Journal for today. I was going to say Dr. Ehrman's website, docpaul.com, and Chip Kids, chipkids.com for more information about the Community Action Program. It's WHFR Dearborn, and coming up right now, we'll go right into her opening theme. This is Highway, the beginning now of Highway 61. Thanks for listening. Take care out there. The longest highway that I know.